Welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line right here on the Common Sense and Justice Network. We're kind of making our switch from the Legal Line Network over to the Common Sense and Justice Network, if you're not recognizing that. It's us. This is Bob Pittman. Glad to have you with us. We're getting going with this week's edition of Legal Line, trying to point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems, maybe demystify the law just a little bit, and maybe translate that legalese. I don't know if we can really do it or not. We're gonna see. Well, we do this each and every week, and look for you at bobpittman.com. Be sure to stop by during the week and listen to the latest podcast, or Bobcast as we call them, or perhaps check out the archive and look for your favorite Bobcast. Take a listen and let us know what you think, too. And if you have topic suggestions, comments, and so forth, be sure to email them to us. You can always email Jeff. It's just jeff@bobpittman.com. That's J-E-F-F, jeff@bobpittman.com. Get your questions in, topic suggestions, comments, whatever might be going on in your life, let us know at jeff@bobpittman.com. Of course, you can call in during the program. It's just 253-471-9694. Give us a call during the program, and we'll try to, of course, get your question answered as well. So this week, we've got a special guest. It's terrific to welcome Paul Jakeman to the program. Thank you. Thanks for taking time to be with us, Paul.
Well, thanks for the invite, Bob.
Yeah, we appreciate your taking time. And I know you get a sort of a busy schedule, I suspect.
Well, in this kind of weather, a lot of times unforeseen problems arise, so we're battling the cold and the snow, here in Tacoma today, but we're able to make it in, and pleasure to be here.
Now, you know what's funny is someone will be listening to this probably in July, because these are up, you know, indefinitely, so
we have
they'll
challenges.
Be saying, well, what is this? What's Paul talking about, you know?
Yeah, right now we're, what, the end of February, and the snow is in the fir crest, yes.
This is true, so we... Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think back. I think I can remember getting not too far back, getting snow in March. If I remember, it's been a while, but once in a while, I don't think I remember anything beyond March. And I've lived here all my life. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to take off the snow tires. Yeah, we're getting real close.
I suppose.
Pull out the garden hoses and.
People who did it just the other day are maybe regretting it. I don't know. Hey, Park 52. Give us the story. What's the history of Park 52? Of course, I've known you for quite a few years, and some of your great colleagues in the business, not with us necessarily today, but good
over the years.
Over the years, a lot of nice folks have been hanging out there. But what's the quick history of Park 52 Real Estate?
Well, we're a local office, and we are a real estate office. We're licensed by the state of Washington, and so we do work like listing real estate for sale and helping people purchase real estate, but our primary focus is property management, and we're the landlord for a number of owners, and we take care of homes and apartments and homeowner associations and condominium associations. So we do the management side of the real estate market.
Yeah, which is got to be interesting, I'm sure. A lot of interesting stories, I suspect. We'll be a little careful.
There are a number of them, yes.
You know, every so often you'll hear comments from people saying, oh, you know, the awful landlord, and they're doing this, they're doing that. You know, landlords sometimes get a little bit of a black eye, along with tenants, of course, because landlords will say, well, those tenants, they're all out to get us, and it's terrible. And I have a feeling it's somewhere in the middle, I suspect, is where it balances out. Mm-hmm. But professional property management, of course, is the best end, I think, of landlording, because you obviously are in it as a business. It isn't just, you know, Bob hanging his hat out as a property manager, and I'm taking care of my one house or two houses, and very difficult sometimes, I think, for an individual to try to tackle that job.
There is a benefit to being a third party and somewhat detached and removed from the emotions of the property management side. We follow a strict set of guidelines all the way down the line, both with owners and tenants, and everybody's treated the same, treated fairly, according to landlord-tenant law, Washington State.
And, of course, every state has a version of that.
Correct. Yeah. So if somebody's listening and they're in a different state, they'd want to check their landlord-tenant law. But ours is pretty well spelled out, and most people are familiar with the different requirements that the tenant has and the requirements also that the owner has to keep a property habitable and take care of any kind of maintenance issues or repair issues.
You know, as we look at today's market, and I know, of course, you've seen lots of different markets over the years, but as you look at today's market, is it a good time to be thinking about becoming a landlord, do you think?
It can be. It's a good time to be looking to maybe purchase a property where prices are down and interest rates are down. Rents overall have stayed fairly stable here in the Northwest or here in the Pierce County area. There's still quite a bit of demand. Fort Lewis and McCord add to that demand, but the rents have remained stable. Prices have come down, which means that if you buy a piece of property and the rents have stayed the same, you'll get a higher return on that money invested. So it's a good time to be looking if somebody's considering it.
There's always a silver lining, I guess,
in the
real estate cloud.
Yeah, real estate cloud, yeah. Each property's a little bit different, and each market's a little bit different, but it's a good time to be investigating. Buying when it's low and maybe keeping the property long-term, you'll be able to sell at a higher price.
And, you know, I think sometimes we've had such a kind of a crummy economy for the past, couple of years or so or more. It seems like a long time. And someone would correct me and say, Bob, it started on this day or whatever.
Yeah.
But you kind of forget sometimes about, the positives. I mean, one of the positives is that real estate is available and there are loans still available, even though I assume you see closings occurring. It must be a little tougher to get a loan, I'm guessing.
A few more requirements that people have to jump through, a few more hoops, have a little bit more resources, have more verifiable income and assets.
There's a good one there, verifiable income.
Verifiable, yes.
Yeah. I remember the last time we purchased a house, I remember the loan officer saying, well, you can do, I forget what they called it, a no-document loan or something, and, you just need to, put down some number. And I'm really puzzling over this. I said, well, but I can show, how much I actually earn. I mean, it's not like and they were kind of taken aback. It was almost like everybody was doing these no-document loans where you just put down a number, which hopefully is a correct number. I mean, that's one thing they didn't talk about much is we have to be truthful in those applications, obviously. But those days have kind of gone by, I assume, and are no longer, applicable.
Correct. Yeah, especially for somebody that's looking to buy real estate as an investment, they have to actually show more in the way of assets. They have to put down a larger down payment. They might have a little higher interest rate.
Sure.
So they're going to be scrutinized a little bit closer if it's an investment property.
Sure.
But the money's still available. It can still be a 30-year fixed rate loan. So the low interest rate can be locked in for a number of years.
And, of course, good rates right now, too.
Very good rates.
I mean, historically, especially. You look back, I look back a few years, and I remember when they were over 10%.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't been that many years. Since that was the
case. There's been
some
wild swings over the years when it comes to interest rates.
There really have. Do you see more people on that loan part? Do you see more people going, obviously, for the fixed rate rather than the variable? Do you see much variable activity?
We do. We see more fixed rates.
Yeah.
If people are going to refinance now, they are looking for maybe a fixed rate loan, get it locked in, have that security of knowing the rate's going to remain the same.
And, of course, if you are going to be a landlord, let's say you're going to rent this property out, or maybe you're going to move into a new property and rent your old one out, having the fixed rate makes a lot of sense, I would think, because you have some certainty as to what you have to pay out.
Mm-hmm. No surprises two or three years down the road.
No. If a person wants to become a landlord, let's say I give you a call and say, hey, Paul, I'm thinking about becoming a landlord. Mm-hmm. What kind of tips would you give me? I mean, I've never done this before, let's say, and I want to take advantage of this market. I want to buy a property. I want to get into the market and rent it. What kind of tips might you give a person like me?
Well, in other words, get some education on it
before
you jump into it.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Probably going to the library or a bookstore and picking up some books on what it's like to be a landlord, landlording for dummies, or maybe some of the other publications would be helpful.
I think there's a good Nolo Press book, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of good overviews that cover being a landlord. And then I think most people know somebody who is a landlord, who has a rental property.
Uh-huh.
So maybe sit down and spend a little bit of time talking with them, finding out maybe what the pros and cons are that they've had. Maybe talking to a property management firm like ours. If you use a property management firm or do it on your own, we're always happy to share ideas and forms and give a general overview. I would Google the Washington State Landlord-Tenant Law, because if you're going to be a landlord, you're going to fall under that, and read that just to make sure it's really something that you'd like to do. And maybe look at different forms.
That's a novel approach. Actually, read it.
Reading the law. Yeah, everybody should read the Landlord-Tenant
Law. That's true. That's true.
Everybody. True. Yeah, whether you're renting a property or being a landlord, you should fall under that Landlord-Tenant Act. And the information that's out there, people can gather forms and documents and the different type of paperwork that's needed through the Rental Housing Association, and they're online also, so you can get a lot of information nowadays.
But, you know, I look at that and I say to myself, okay, I'm going to play landlord all of a sudden. Well, I've got to find tenants. I've got to do some kind of screening, I assume. I mean, because you can have someone show up at the doorstep and look like maybe a good tenant. I mean, be responsible, or appear to be responsible. And but I mean, I have to be able to screen that person intelligently and lawfully too. Obviously, there are certain things you can't do when you're a landlord in terms of screening. And so I guess it kind of scares me, and it makes me think. In fact, when anybody ever asks me as an attorney about becoming a landlord, I always say, think about property managers and having even if it's just one house that you're going to do. To me, it makes so much more sense, to have a property management company get involved. If I'm going to do that, how do I find, obviously I know Park 52, but I mean, let's say I'm in Waco, Texas, or wherever I might be. How do I go about trying to find a property management firm that I can rely on and that I can trust?
Well, I think looking in the phone book or online is a starting point. Uh-huh. You can check with our national association, which is NARPM, NARPM.org. And that's the National Association of Residential Property Managers. And they're a nationwide organization, so people can go online to that website. They can pull up different management firms. It's a great way of getting contact information, because you'd have the firm's name, address, their phone number, website, email. Somebody could get a hold of different firms. You might want to check with local real estate brokers. A lot of times the brokers can make a recommendation or a referral. And if people just drive around and see signs, oftentimes you'll notice a company is real active in the market and have a number of properties, and there's somebody to talk to. And maybe talk to two or three different property management firms, kind of get a feel for what their philosophy is, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and who you feel comfortable with.
I guess in my I'm just sitting here thinking, if I'm going to engage somebody, I mean, one of the things I'm going to expect, I guess, is someone who now is going to take over all the burden too. I mean, as far as someone calling at midnight to say that the whatever is, I'm sure you've never gotten one of those calls, right?
They happen quite often, actually. Yes,
all times of the day or night.
Emergencies happen. Yep.
Yeah, and of course, if you're doing it yourself, then that means that you're the one who gets the call. And you're the one who goes over to the house or whatever it is you have to do to get things in order. I guess if you're, maybe if you're living there, maybe it's a fourplex or something and you live in one of the units, maybe it's not quite so hard. I know I threaten people with fixing things, and they immediately fix them. They say, oh, no, Bob, we don't want you to do anything.
Well, it's working all of a sudden, so it's not a problem.
I'm notorious for, I mean, people don't ask me to fix anything, maybe on a legal basis, but they never ask. I don't know if it's totally true or not, but that's the rumor out there that I hear. but I have to believe that's one. I mean, if I'm looking at one, I mean, that's one of the things that I would like, is the hassle-free nature of knowing that somebody's actually, screening the tenants, because I think that would be so hard. And maybe it's probably second nature to you, but to me, that would be really hard to know that you have a tenant who maybe, and in fact, what are you looking for? I mean, is someone who hasn't defaulted before, someone who, what do you actually look for?
Well, we're looking to put somebody in the house for an owner who will pay the rent and pay it on time and take good care of the property. Okay. So that's really what our goal is. And in order to find that person, or to maybe eliminate people that don't meet that criteria, we'll run a credit check on everybody. We'll run a criminal check on everybody to find out where they stand. And it doesn't have to be gold-plated or 100%, but we want to have reasonable credit. We're looking for references. If they've owned a house, we want to check their mortgage payment history. If they've rented, we want to talk to a previous landlord. We want to find out what kind of references they've had over the last two residences. We'd want to have verifiable income. How do they plan to pay the rent?
Okay.
So if they're employed, they bring us maybe a W-2 or bring us a pay stub. But if they're self-employed, we might have to look at tax returns or some sort of income verification for the last couple of years.
Sure.
And, yeah, that's how we go about selecting the tenant. And
but see, as an individual, for an individual who's not a property management company, to do a background check on somebody, what a daunting task. I mean, I don't even know. I guess you can sign up with a third-party company, I guess, that would actually perform that.
Yeah. They'll give you basically the report, but then it's up to the landlord or the property manager to interpret that report to find out whether or not it's 100% complete or if that report raises red flags, which was the discussion at our staff meeting today, going above and beyond a criminal report to delve into it and find out maybe some more facts. And it was really a lot of investigating, a lot of detailed work. Yeah. So finding the tenant, doing promotion, showings, getting an application and screening is a big part of the process for finding the tenant.
Well, part of the promotion, I'm just looking here at a great website that you have. And it's just at, am I right, Jeff? I just go to Park 52, the number 52, park52.com.
Mm-hmm.
I come up with the website. You've got a great one. And it and obviously that's part of what helps me as a, let's say I'm going to place a property with you. I know you're out marketing all the time, of course, and people are, anybody looking for an apartment or a house to rent is going to be looking at sites like yours.
Correct.
I would assume.
Yeah.
And not so much just for, let's look for Bob out there somewhere with his house or apartment.
And they may be looking for a house and they're in Tacoma. They could be looking for a house because they're coming into the area. We've had a number of military contact us from overseas saying they're going to be stationed at McCord, Lewis, and actually get a hold of us, fill out applications, and get the process started before they even come stateside. So the website gives people information on properties, and then with the interior photos, they can usually get a pretty good idea of the type of property and if it's going to meet their needs.
Well, you've done a nice job on the website.
We can give a shout out to Michael. He's the one who
worked on that.
There we go.
Good job, Michael.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things as you talk about that, it makes me think is if I'm a tenant, I would rather go to the Park 52 operation, if you will, rather than just go out and answer an ad on Craigslist or the News Tribune or some, but just answer an ad and go see owner of a property who maybe owns one property. I would feel more comfortable as a tenant, I think. I hadn't really thought about that part of it.
But we hear that quite a bit.
I'll bet.
We actually do. I kind of think if I were in a different role, if I were moving down to Portland and I didn't have any idea of that neighborhood or any idea of the market, I might go into a management company and say, I need help finding a good place. What can you recommend? And that's the kind of service we provide to the tenant. And then if there is a problem, the tenants know that they can reach us with an emergency number. They know they can reach us by on the web, or they know they can walk into our office 6 days a week and deal with us. So we're real easy to reach and real easy to deal with on that part.
That makes a lot of sense. And I guess, just in this day and age when things are, you worry about all kinds of stuff, and I guess you can worry less if you're using a good property manager, I would assume.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the peace of mind factor. But I hadn't thought about the tenant so much. You always think about the landlord somehow. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, from the tenant standpoint, what we want to do is have a nice piece of property. We want to make it in ready-to-rent condition. So any kind of small maintenance problems, we try to make sure we are 100% done. I mean, there are always going to be the little things. But we want to have a property that's clean, good repair, no safety issues, and that's ready to move into. And then we do a detailed move-in condition report that protects the tenant when they move out. They've got written record of what the property was like when they moved in. The lease agreements, everything spelled out in writing, so there's no verbal agreements that could be misunderstood. Everything's up front. And then, we have a long-term relationship. Some of our tenants have been with us as long as some of the owners, going back 5, 10, 15 years in some cases.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to some of the calls we've gotten over the last couple of decades now of doing the program, and one sticks in mind. I was doing the home show one time, and we were doing a remote and stuff, and I remember a fellow coming up holding his 1-year-old baby, and coming up, and he had come in because he'd heard the program, and he'd been locked out by his landlord.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, I think back, and here, obviously, that it clearly wasn't a property, I would assume, not a property management company.
I would doubt it, yep.
Because we all know that, I mean, you can't lock a tenant out even if they haven't paid the rent.
Correct.
And you just think about situations like that. I remember I've gotten calls over the years for people who, and it's usually, I'd say, more calls from tenant folks maybe than landlords, although maybe some on the landlord side too. But the calls that might have to do with, you know, the landlord won't fix anything. But on the tenant side, I guess for a landlord, landlord says, you know, the tenant stopped paying rent. Mm-hmm. They won't move out. What do I do? Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And so I just keep thinking, you know, what a headache for both tenants and for landlords.
Job security, Bob. That's what we have.
I guess so. I think you might have more job security than an attorney. I don't know.
Well, from the tenant standpoint, the biggest issues that we hear about are people that just enter into the property unannounced. Now, the owner still owns the property, but I guess it's my understanding once the tenant signs a lease agreement, he has certain rights to that property.
And as an attorney, I would say yes.
Those are legal rights.
Yeah. And so, you can't just go in as a landlord and walk into the property to inspect it unannounced, at least.
Correct. Yep. Everything has to protect the tenant's privacy. Wow. As far as replacement and repair of items, that can get a little bit tricky because sometimes it takes a little while to actually work your way through a problem and replace it, but it can't be ignored. So if a furnace is out or a stove is out or something isn't working, it needs to be corrected.
Sure.
Yeah. And then... I guess the other item that sometimes comes up is discrimination, where sometimes somebody will turn a tenant down for no good reason, and that's a serious breach of a legal item. So
that's true. I know when you're doing the screening, it must. You can legitimately say screen somebody out because maybe they're a convicted felon. I don't know. Is that that's the case? I guess you can.
It's not a protected class in our area.
Not a protected class. Mm-hmm. Just like I always kid people and say, you know, attorneys are not a protected class.
No, they're not. We can actually say from attorneys when we see attorneys come in, Bob.
Yeah, sorry, we don't want to rent to you because you're an attorney. That's actually, you actually can. I mean, I think I'd want to be really careful doing that, but I imagine. I don't know what we better not go too far there. Hey, we have we want to talk some more about all this, but we did have a couple of calls come in, and we'll see what we can do on this. Here's Linda from Seattle, and she had called in, and Diane was kind enough to get all this down for us. But anyway, she found that one of her renters died in one of her houses that she rents out. Mm-hmm. And she wants to know what kind of rights she has as far as getting all of the stuff out. Apparently the guy has no relatives. And she also wants to know how does she get the rent that she owes. and then to top it off, she found a checkbook. I mean, she must have, obviously she's gone in. She found a checkbook but doesn't know what she should legally do. Wow, I guess I have to fill in there too.
I would defer to you. Yeah. Ask what legally she should do. I can tell you what we've run into this situation before.
Has that happened before?
And unfortunately, it happens, you know, with some regularity. What we'll normally do is immediately go to the application, and on our application, we have friends and family listed as references. So that's the first phone call.
Okay.
And then typically, it's a matter of dealing with the personal property.
Sure.
The person who's passed
away. And of course, let me say first, if you actually find someone who has died, I mean, you want to call 911, of course.
Oh,
right
absolutely.
Away, obviously, I didn't mean to. Just in case that hasn't happened, Linda, you do need to call 911. Make sure the police know that the person has died. I assume that's happened, but you shouldn't assume anything I found, too.
No. And in our cases, most of the time, we're finding out because we're getting a call saying someone's passed away and they're no longer there. And then what we're doing, we're dealing more with the physical aspect of the apartment or of the house.
Yeah.
But, if we walk in and find somebody that's either really ill or passed away, get on a hold of the authorities first.
And that's what everybody should do if you actually find something. I mean, get on 911 immediately. But now you've got all the stuff in the. Let's say that someone has died. A single person has died. There aren't too many people around. Maybe there are no relatives. What process do you go through as far as all the property that's inside the house or apartment?
Well, we feel it's our responsibility to secure it. So that's the first thing we do is make sure the apartment was locked up and secure. Then what we do is try to reach family or friends and try to find out if there's some sort of an estate that we're going to be working with, if there's an attorney involved or if there's a family member. after that point, if we can't locate somebody, then we'll box everything up and we'll move it into storage. And again, lock it up. And then we'll hang on to it for 120 days.
Okay. You know, just, well, in fact, there's an abandoned property provision in the Landlord-Tenant Act, and probably most states have some form of an abandoned property.
Yes.
And I guess you would at some point have to treat it if there's no probate going, if there's nobody to even talk to, at some point treat it as abandoned property, I guess.
If no one steps forward, we can store it for so long, but we can't store it indefinitely. But we'll make every effort we can to try to find the person. And usually mail will come to the property, so we might do a little investigation to see what kind of correspondence is going back and forth. You can post some notices.
Yeah. I think on Linda, when she says what are her rights as far as, you know, getting rid of the stuff, I think initially that's good advice she should be storing, assuming that, and I guess this is an assumption we have to make, that there is nobody connected, although I guess you have to be careful about who you give it to, too, don't you?
You do. Mm-hmm.
Because if you, let's say you have stored a tenant's property, mm-hmm. and somebody just shows up and says, hey, I'm Cousin Arthur, mm-hmm. and I need to pick up, Jane's stuff or whatever. How do you know that person is actually authorized?
Yeah.
That's a hard one.
That is.
And so if we've had a death, I would think that we'd want to have some kind of a, well, that's interesting. I guess legally we'd either have a probate going on, or if there's no will, it's an intestate probate. Mm-hmm. There is a small affidavit procedure. I don't know if you've ever had that brought into the office, mm-hmm. but I would think that if you're holding, so let's picture Linda holding the property here in Washington State, you could start the small estate affidavit procedure. Let's say you're Cousin Arthur and you want to go pick up the stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if you are entitled under the statute in the small estate affidavit procedure, you could complete that, provide that to the property management firm or the owner, and lay claim to the personal effects. There's a $100,000 limit in Washington, and most states have some form of this. Some of them will not be as high as Washington State, $100,000. But I think the small estate affidavit would work for the relatives to make the claim, and then also take the heat off of the property management firm, because you've got to be sure that you're giving it to the right person.
Absolutely. Yep.
So you'd have to get the small estate affidavit in, know that it's a correct form, by the way. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Boy, that's a great question, Linda. I guess, and the problem is for Linda, I think, is here she is running out, and she ends up incurring legal costs, I guess, to make sure she's doing it right. Mm-hmm. I guess there's really no way around that. If you're going to be a landlord, there are certain things you may end up, eating some costs, I guess, mm-hmm. and I guess you have to plan on that.
She might be able to minimize her costs, though, if she mm-hmm. were able to turn the property over and then find a new tenant. So
that's
somewhere
true.
Between the person who was deceased moving out and storing his things and finding a new tenant, that's the part that has to be done correctly.
Yeah.
She should probably seek legal advice.
I think so, too. I would probably, and I guess if I were not going to use a property management firm, I think I would have at least an attorney on call, not like, a retainer, monthly mm-hmm. retainer, but I think I'd have someone who perhaps had helped me with the rental agreement, let's say, in general, maybe the form of it. Let's say mm-hmm. I've got two or three rental houses and I want to do it myself. I would have an attorney that knows my situation, and from time to time I can get a question answered. I've paying for the advice, but maybe I'm able to fax in a document for them to look at, or in this kind of situation that Linda has, maybe get somebody's help then mm-hmm. to make sure that I do the abandoned property statute correctly, or that if there's a small estate affidavit presented to me mm-hmm. by the tenant's relatives, that I check to make sure it's adequate.
Yep.
So that I'm not releasing the property to the wrong person.
And it might be tempted to release the property just to say, okay, well, here, let's get it out of the house.
This.
I need my house vacant. And then, that would lead to maybe making a big mistake.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's as we're looking at the columns here, that's another check mark on the reason to have a property management firm, because I don't have to worry about that if I have the property. That's right.
Well, and that really is what landlording is all about, and that's a legal agreement. It's an illegal agreement between a landlord and a tenant, and those are issues a lot of times dealt with by attorneys.
Correct.
Property managers can give guidance and direction, But when it gets down to the legal issues, we have an attorney that we work with all the time that provides us guidance and direction, and it's good just to get a sounding board to, you know, because we run into situations we haven't run into in the past and have that investigated.
Well, but then that, to me, is another reason to think about a property management company, because you have those kinds of connections, too. And can get answers to questions without. I mean, for me to do that as a landlord on my own, I would guess is going to cost more too to establish that relationship, because you've got X number of properties under management. The attorney is going to help you from time to time on a number of ones, and I would think you'd get even in repairs. I mean, that's got to be true. For you to go out and get something repaired is probably going to be more efficient and more cost effective than me going out on my own, I would think, anyway. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's my opinion. And so that's maybe another advantage on the property management company side.
Well, look at Linda's situation. Yeah. She might need somebody to go in and box up all the personal items and do the hauling.
Sure.
She might need a storage locker to put it in. After the person's out, she might need to the cleaning and maybe getting the unit ready to turn. She has to fill out the correct paperwork as far as what is the tenant's deposit and the move-out condition report, and all those things have to be on file. She should take a lot of photos and document what personal property was in the property and then where it got moved to. So those kind of things an owner can do. It's like having a second job.
Sure.
You know, there's,
sure.
There's an awful lot of time and effort invested, but some owners enjoy that. We're happy to help them and support them, but
well, I guess,
then they come to us down the road as a property management firm. So
that's right.
And actually, you know, quite honestly, Bob, from our standpoint, working with an owner who has been a landlord actually makes our job easier, because then we're on the same level. We're discussing the same sort of issues, and they're usually telling us what they want us to do because they've been there. So, you know, working with experienced property managers, owners, there's really an advantage.
That makes a lot of sense.
Good luck,
too.
Linda.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Appreciate the call, Linda.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at what kind of property challenges do you end? I mean, what are some examples of challenges that you end up with as a property manager, just in general?
Well, they do vary quite a bit. Just looking outside right now, you can see the weather. We're in February, and there's snow on the ground. So that's going to usually lead to cold temperatures, and plumbing is the first thing that comes to mind, is we want to have the plumbing protected. If houses are vacant, we want to have the heat on. We want to be looking for any kind of slip and fall issues. You know, if you have certain properties are more prone to having those kind of conditions. This time of year, or this time of month, we're usually wrapping up our rent collection and our paperwork, and we're getting ready to move people in now the 1st of March, so we're getting geared up with move-in conditions and such. During the summer, primarily, it's exterior issues. We're dealing with roofs. We're dealing with exterior painting. We're dealing with yards. that's a big issue on the single-family homes. And that's usually the
So you don't recommend cementing the yards in anymore.
I don't think you ever recommended that. we don't recommend a golf course yard either if it's going to be a rental property.
No, somewhere
in between. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah,
I remember driving by one property years ago, and they had actually put concrete in place of their lawn and painted it green. I always thought, boy, I don't know.
It can be low maintenance that way, but it can also hold down the rentability and desirability.
Yeah, I'm not sure I recommend the concrete with the green paint. So I imagine taking that out's got to be a real challenge.
Yeah.
Do you find that many people who are renting eventually buy a home? I mean, is that something that you end up helping people with too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was really common back in like 2002, 2003. A lot of people were able to take advantage of the financing to move into buying a house. And there's some pros to buying a property. There's also cons to buying a property. All of a sudden, they're responsible for fixing the hot water tank or fixing a leaky roof or doing those things. So home ownership has its advantages. Renting a property has its advantages. And so right now, I think most of our tenants have been pretty stable, not really moving around a lot at this time, either to other rental properties or to rush out and buy a house.
Sure.
So things have been pretty stable and actually that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it is, I'm sure. And actually rents have been fairly stable apparently too.
They have
in terms of not dropping off a cliff like home prices, which you know, which is interesting.
Correct, yeah. Prices on houses have taken a pretty serious drop.
Right.
Rents have stayed pretty stable. They were down a little bit last year just because there was a little bit bigger supply than what the demand is, but now the demand has come back up again, and so we're on par with where our rents have been pretty much for the last 3 years.
Do you find most people wanting to rent homes rather than apartments, or does it just depend on the circumstances?
I think it depends on the size of the family, the circumstances, what's available in the market. There's advantages to renting an apartment.
Yep.
There's advantages to renting a single-family home. Location makes a big difference.
Sure.
Some people want to be in a certain area, and the only properties that are available may be houses.
Right.
So, but we rent all kinds of condos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people rent condos. Some people rent apartments. Some people will rent duplexes, so some different level of multi-unit. And then in single-family homes, people run the gamut from the small one- and two-bedroom starters all the way up to the big executive Street of Dreams homes.
Sure, which is
a lot to choose from.
I'm sure. I'm a homeowner, but I could sort of sometimes I say, it would be nice just to rent it. If you rent, you don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, other than just not destroying the place, obviously. But I mean, you don't have to worry about any of the hassles, if you will, of ownership. I think people don't realize how much there is that goes with the ownership of a home, and a lot of times people neglect a lot of things that they shouldn't be neglecting and wouldn't be neglected if they were renting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's whatever it might be, whether it's plumbing issues, painting, whatever it is. I mean, the painting of a house is kind of a giant undertaking.
It is, and it's a large expense oftentimes.
Yeah.
It has to be paid for at one time. So I think when people figure in rent and compare it to house payments, they say, well, I'm paying $1,200 a month in rent, or I pay $1,200 a month in a house payment. The house payment needs to include maintenance and upkeep.
That's right.
And
That's right.
If you take a couple, 3 years of what you've spent on your house, I've spent on my house, and divide it by 12, you see where it adds up pretty fast each and every
month. I'm pretty sure it would have been better to rent, actually, as I look back over the past several years.
Our website's up on your screen. See if you look, see a house there you like the looks of.
Yeah, I think I might just be checking this out here, That's neat. You really have, you have done a nice job. So actually, if you look at the website, by the way, if everybody goes to just park52.com, you can actually search. This is really fun. You can actually search by, I can do a lot of different things, can't I? I can put price, I see.
Okay, search by price, and that's where a lot of people begin their search. They're looking at a certain price range. They might be looking for a number of bedrooms.
Right.
People look by school district. A lot of times people want to be in a certain neighborhood or school district, so you can search by location.
Right.
So there's a,
in fact, I see. Now, you do some office stuff, too, don't you?
We do some small commercial and some office.
I just found one right here on your website. Looks pretty good. $350 a month.
That's it's a bargain.
That is a bargain, yeah. Oh man, that's great. But no, it's an easy to use website, I know, and I've appreciated that too. But you can put in all your parameters, whatever it might be, in terms of location and what have you, which is nice too. And that's another thing, I guess, as a landlord, as I just sit and try to think through, whether to do it yourself or to have a property management firm. I guess my own bias is towards the property management firm. What kind of costs are involved if I decide to use a property management firm? What do I usually have to look at as a landlord?
Well, our management fee is based on a percentage of the rent collected.
Okay.
So on some multi-units, we do apartment complexes where there's a site manager and there's a number of units. The range may be in that 5% of the collected rent range.
Sure.
And then moving up, if somebody has multiple properties, we might be maybe in that 7 or 8% range, and for normal single-family homes, around 10% of the collected rent.
Uh-huh.
And there's some caps and specials we always have available.
Oh, sure.
And then typically there'll be a leasing fee. Some companies charge a percentage of the first month's rent.
Uh-huh.
We charge a flat fee. That's tenant placement covering the hard costs. So, so an owner might have an investment at the beginning if there's a vacancy, and then a certain percentage each month. Typically, the way a management company will work is they'll deal with the tenant, sign the lease with the tenant, and the tenant will then pay the property management company each month.
Right.
So around the first of the month, all these rents come in from all these different properties, and we'll run them through our trust account.
Mm-hmm.
And then the owner distributions will be made out to the owner. And we use Columbia Bank, so each month a distribution goes out to the owner, either directly into their bank account, or we'll send them out a paper check, or we'll make mortgage payments. And some owners just have us keep their money, and when they want it, they'll call us up and say they want a check.
Sure. Yeah. Now, on that point, you mentioned trust account. You're regulated by the state.
Yes.
Is that not correct?
And that's an important point. Yeah, we're a licensed real estate company, so the state of Washington Department of Licensing is the one that oversees us, and they'll come in and audit our books.
Every so often they stop by for a visit, I suppose.
They do, and they've done that for many years.
Yeah.
And every time we've been fine. And,
which is great.
We've got a really good staff, good bookkeeping, all the checkbooks are in balance, all the money's accounted for. And we have a real good system. I'm real proud of the office staff on that.
Yeah. Well, I can, from personal experience, I can say how great everybody is there. What about pets? If a person is, let's say, as a landlord, you say, gee, I want to make sure that nobody has a pet ever. I mean, is that reasonable on the landlord's part, do you think, in this day and age to say no pets? Or is it better to be flexible?
It's better.
I happen to be a dog lover, so it's hard for me to say no pets.
But. And I'm a pet person, too. Some of our best tenants have pets.
Yeah.
On the other side, pets can do quite a bit of damage.
That's true.
And so you really have to sort of strike a balance.
That's really, going to be hard.
It is, and it's really up to the owner. So if we're managing for an owner, we'll ask an owner, well, what do you want us to do, Bob, about your house?
Right.
What are your thoughts about pets? And here's the pros and cons.
Right.
And oftentimes, if you'll allow a person to have a pet, they'll have a tendency maybe to stay longer because they won't be looking around for another property that does allow pets.
Right.
And it'll rent a little bit faster because, you know, you've got a number of people out there that aren't immediately eliminated. So usually you can get a little bit more maybe in rent it a little bit faster, have a little bit more stable tenant. On the downside is if there is damage, it can add up fairly quickly.
That's
so what our thought is, as long as the person is responsible for that damage or those accidents, then we'll allow pets with an extra pet deposit.
Sure. Yeah. Makes sense.
And we've had good luck over the years. I can recall a few where it was really, really bad.
Yeah.
And that always sticks in the back of my mind. But
I'm doing a workshop coming up. If anybody wants to check into it, you can check the website later. I don't have it up just yet, but later in March, doing one at the Humane Society about estate planning for pets, which is a big issue.
Yeah.
And so we've got...
Who's going to take care of the pets after someone is gone?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's
making arrangements for them.
That's true, and a lot of people don't do anything, which is usually not a good idea because you can't just assume that someone's going to take your pet on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, prearranging and doing things like that is a good idea. Maybe we can rent a house for just the cats and the dogs. No, we better not.
Well, where's that office for $350? We might be able to work something
out there.
That's
right. Yeah, that'll be the pet castle or something. I don't know. But I, you know, as I think about people who have pets, I mean, they tend to be, especially people who are doing estate planning for pets, tend to be, you know, a pretty caring group for the animals. They really, I know there are exceptions, of course, but you know, a lot of people are nicer to their dogs and cats than to people sometimes. Maybe for good reason, I think sometimes.
Yeah.
But I've been to houses where people have. I was at a house a while back, and they had a bedroom just for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
That was the dog's own bedroom.
Yeah.
And it was in pretty good shape, too, I noticed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the market's changed a little bit, and perhaps people that normally would have gone out and purchased a house, now they're looking to rent a house, and if they're coming in from out of the area, then they're going to come with a family pet, and we don't like to ask anybody to give up their pet to rent a house. So we'll try to make accommodations for them, and if they're interested in a house and that particular owner, that particular house won't do pets, we'll try to find them a house where
pets
are welcome and we can work something out.
That makes sense.
And sometimes there are restrictions. They might want to live in maybe a neighborhood or a community where pets aren't really welcome, and then there are other properties that are more pet-friendly. So.
Well, and again, that's you knowing the neighborhood, though, too. Because
I
have a feeling you probably have been in just about every neighborhood in your geographic.
Our travels,
I suspect. That's got to be true. Well, if you're just joining us, by the way, we're talking to Paul Jakeman. This is Bob Pittman, and Paul is our guest today. He's with Park 52, which is a great real estate company. I can recommend them personally, but Park 52 here in the Tacoma area.
I guess I could say you've been a client of ours for a number of
years. A long time, that's
so
true. That's true.
So the relationship.
I'm biased, but in a good way.
Okay.
hey, we have another question that came in from Bellingham. Okay. The rules about subletting. He's going to be off for the summer, so I wonder if this is a student maybe. Has an apartment for a year, which would be September 1, found a person who's going to take the apartment for 3 months. Does he have any rights or ability to sublet that apartment.
Sounds like another legal
question. It does sound like a legal question. It really depends on the agreement. I would say a lot of times you're not supposed to be subletting. I would imagine the rental agreement that Park 52 does, I suspect, probably prohibits subletting. Is that correct?
Yeah, but we will entertain an offer if it makes sense both for the person and for the owner. So what I would suggest is for him to contact his landlord. He probably wants that person who's going to be involved for 3 months to fill out an application because that would protect him, because if that person moves in for 3 months and damages the unit, wouldn't he ultimately be responsible?
Absolutely. That's one thing to remember. If you're going to sublet, you're still on the lease. Yep. And if you sublet the apartment or the house with the landlord's permission, the landlord has recourse to both of you, typically, in the sublet arrangement. You could so you want to be really careful. So the screening process, and maybe that would be the thing to do, obviously working with the landlord, but let's say it is a property management firm. The property management firm can do the screening process, I assume.
What he might do is contact his manager and say that I have somebody that'd like to live here for 3 months. Could they do that if they pass your screening? They would come in. We'd get their credit. We'd get their criminal. We'd probably want to get a little extra deposit, which would protect actually the first person as well as the person who's subletting. And then, we could do something like that. And actually, there would be an advantage to the owner because then he would have somebody living in the unit and taking care of
it.
Probably the worst thing he could do, though, is just move out, hand the keys over to his buddy, and then he could come back in 3 months and really have a mess, not necessarily with his landlord, but with his buddy who created some kind of issues.
And I think that that's what happens sometimes, and I would we would discourage Greg here, who left this, gave us this message. I would discourage him from just doing that. You always want to play by the rules, and you want to, of course, hopefully you've read your lease agreement, rental agreement. So many people sign things without reading them, and hopefully you don't let people do that. I mean, as far as a property management firm, I'm sure you don't. You encourage people. Obviously, you can't force people to read, but we all should read what we're signing. You know, the one that example that I think of when I think about signing things is, you know, online. You go on, and maybe there's a software download for some application or something, and you're supposed to say that you have read it and you agree. And I printed one the other day when I had gone on to pick up a new website listing for the Common Sense and Justice Network. So so I used I think GoDaddy for it, and it wanted me, of course, to agree to all these terms, which I which I did, and but I went ahead and printed up what I was agreeing to. And I think it was 52 or 53 pages long. I put it in a file because I actually have it, so I can show what it was that I agreed to. But, I mean, people are not – I cannot believe that anybody's reading that stuff.
We give out a sample copy of our lease.
Like it.
And we give it out, you know, because you're right. At the time somebody's moving in, they're excited. They want to get the keys. They want to get moved in. Where do I sign? So on our website, I think there's a sample copy of our lease.
Okay,
so anyone who
good.
Wants to work with our office can go and read the lease at their leisure, read all the fine print.
I like that.
And then at the time they turn in an application and it's approved and we set a move-in date, we'll give them a sample lease to go over just
That's
so they're
neat.
Familiar with all the forms.
And you know what I also noticed is you've got a tenant handbook.
Yes.
And, boy, that's great. I like this. And it's not 52 pages long, so it's something. It's 12 pages.
It's written in English.
Yeah, but I like this. I think that's great. So if anybody wants to get a copy of the, I assume anybody can come in and grab it, the tenant handbook, just stop by park52.com and go over to tenant information, and then right there is tenant handbook, and click on that. That's terrific. I like that. What kind of tips would you give to someone then who is trying to decide between renting or buying? I mean, would you, other than the economic thing, I mean, what would you say? I mean, if I gave you a call and said, hey, I don't know what I want to do. I'm trying to decide. I'm going to be here for the next 5 or 6 years, you know, and I know you do both sales and rentals. What would you say to me?
5 or 6 years guaranteed?
Well, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe not.
And I think that's the real problem with real estate purchases right now is if somebody's only in a house for 2 or 3 years and then they have to resell it, you know, it costs money to buy, it costs money to sell, use a broker to sell, pay excise tax, title insurance, and all the paperwork charges.
That's
you
true.
Can run up a selling expense of, what, maybe 6, 7, 8% of the sales price.
Easily.
So that would be my biggest concern is if somebody's not 100% sure they're going to stay in the area, for at least the six, 7 years, then renting probably makes sense. And I think some people have actually been sort of trapped into that job market locale where maybe other opportunities are out there, but they can't take advantage of them because they're they own a house here, they're unable to move. So part of it would depend, I think, on the person, their plans, or the family situation, job situation.
Well, I mean, you sure maintain flexibility, obviously, if you're going to rent. I assume that when you rent, you're typically agreeing to so many months, I would guess, half a year, a year-long lease. I don't know what the typical arrangement is.
On a single-family house, typically 1 year, and at the end of the year, either month by month or another year, year at a time. On apartments, oftentimes those will be 6 months, maybe month by month, maybe a year, but 6 months is maybe more common in apartments. And then people have flexibility to move on if they want to get something different, bigger, or move to a different area.
Now, for a tenant, is there, let's say you've gone through the year on the house and they're trying to decide, do I just go month to month, 1 year lease? What's the advantage, what are the pros and cons on month to month versus the year long lease?
Well, from the standpoint of somebody renting a property, at the end of that 12 months, if they go month by month, they can move with, 20 days written notice before the end of the month. So they've got flexibility there. The disadvantage would be that a landlord could come along and say, well, I'm going to move back into the house, I'm going to sell the house, I'm going to raise the rent, and there's a little bit of uncertainty. From the landlord's standpoint, if he does another year lease, he's well committed the property and can't do anything for 12 months. So a landlord might know that he wants to maybe raise the rent or sell the property, and he'll go more along the lines of a month by month.
But that's kind of an analysis. If I come into the office and I'm talking, I mean, I assume we'd go through and discuss things like that. As far as being a tenant, let's say, and trying to decide what's best.
Yeah, and we have to reach an agreement between both parties. So if you come in and say, I like my tenant, I drove by, they're wonderful people, pay on time, get them to sign another lease, I'll get a hold of them. And if they say, no, we really don't want to commit to another year, we'll go month by month, and we kind of negotiate. And some landlords will put a premium on the rent. If somebody wants to say month by month, the rent goes up by a certain amount each month. So they're compensated for the
risk factor, it's all
negotiable. But a good working relationship with both the owner and the tenant is kind of key to make sure everybody is understanding all the different options.
So where do you see things trending? Here we are, and sitting here in 2011. If you're listening in 2012, we're back a little bit. You already know if you're listening in 2012 happened.
I'm looking outside. I think it's going to get warmer.
All right. I feel comfortable with that recommendation.
I'm comfortable with that forecast. And I'm just a real estate agent. Doing it though for a while, and I think it's going to, we're probably bouncing along the bottom, and hopefully the market will trend up a little bit. I'm happy I'm in the Northwest versus maybe, you know, some of the other areas of the country. So our market's not terrible.
Well, I had someone in the office the other day, and they had they're thinking of retiring in Arizona, and they'd gone down to one of the towns in Arizona, and she was telling me she had purchased a condominium for like $47,000. I mean, it's just, I haven't heard of figures below a couple hundred thousand in years, it seems like, let alone under $100,000. And I mean, it just boggled my mind. I looked at the, out of curiosity, on the little website she had mentioned, and there's a ton of them. And so some markets, like you say, are in big trouble. Las Vegas, I guess, is another one, apparently.
A friend of mine was talking about a condominium she picked up down there, and I think it was like $75,000. And I saw pictures of it, and I'm going, you got to be kidding me.
That boggles my mind.
It's from a bank, and so the banks are just unloading the property. And that's not a realistic price. I'm sure the condo's worth more than that, but that's what it's sold for.
Yeah, and of course, if you've got a ton of them on the market.
You've got a ton of them available. Yeah.
So then that drives, of course, there's a lot of risk that goes with that, I assume. You know, you look at the, let's say that condominium that's at 75. Well, what if nobody's paying their dues?
Yeah.
Their condo association dues. Mm-hmm. Does it all fall on you as the loan owner, let's say, to pay? I assume, I mean, I don't know if anybody thinks about that risk, but I would imagine there's a little bit of a risk there. I mean, what's going on with the unit? Are they maintaining it? I mean, there's no money maybe to, because I assume if most of them are in foreclosure, nobody's paying their dues.
Yeah. And with condominium management, we do condominium management. Some of the associations, if there's vacancies or foreclosures, and those people aren't paying, the fixed costs are the same, and they just have to be divided among the owners that are paying, so the dues will go up. Money's not being put aside for future capital improvements that's not on budget, but we'll work our way through that. It just takes a little bit longer.
Yeah. But, well, I'm glad we're not in that market because, you know, that market is not what we have here, I assume, in Washington State, especially Western Washington and the Tacoma area.
Correct. Yeah. And with the economy coming back, it probably will bounce back a little bit faster than maybe Las Vegas or Arizona.
I know a couple houses in our little cul-de-sac have come up for sale and have sold in the past 8 to 12 months or something. And they weren't on the market a long time. They were a little lower than, obviously, than they could have sold them maybe, two or three years ago. But it didn't seem extraordinary either. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem like a real, real low. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. You hear things. And of course, what they're looking at, I guess, is what's selling. It doesn't talk about houses that, because a lot of people don't bother to put their house on the market, I'm assuming, when you're in a market like this. And yet it's a good time probably to buy if you're long-term?
I would think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, long-term. And maybe to diversify. Yeah. If somebody doesn't have real estate holdings, they might want to add some real estate. This would be a good time to be looking at that and then looking long-term.
Yeah.
We were buying, property back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and it won't be that uncommon now to look back, 10 or 15 years from now and think this was a great opportunity. But I continue to look at real estate like shelter. I mean, it's a place to live.
Right.
And everybody needs a home.
That's right.
More so than an investment. And I think that's what threw everything out of whack, is that everybody was looking at the dollars and cents signs of real estate. But if you just look at it and let real estate take care of itself, it'll do fine over a longer time. And some of the advantages would be tax advantages. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's still some tax advantages. Principal reduction as people pay on their mortgage.
That's true.
Each month, the mortgage gets to be a little bit less.
Right.
And then rents, if rents stay stable or actually go up a little bit, there's some cash flow now people are seeing from their rental property.
Sure. Yeah. If you're looking at the value of a house, I mean, would you be it seems like years ago people used to say, well, your rent might be 0.5% or so of the value of the house. Do you think are there any rules of thumb like that anymore? I mean, I don't know if that's even true back a few years ago.
We look at rents based on comparables, what other similar houses are renting for and what the current market is. So, and the market changes so quickly. So one example is out in DuPont, where we manage a number of properties, and it's primarily a military market out there. When the troops are rotating out, rents are going to drop. Vacancies go up, and it's just a fact of the market.
Because you just got a whole bunch of people all of a sudden.
And we're scrambling. Yeah. And we're giving move-in specials, and we're doing all we can to fill them up. And then when the troops rotate home, all of a sudden there's no vacancies, and rents go up. But that's one market.
Sure.
But, the good areas that have good schools and are desirable to live, they'll get a more premium rent, and some of the areas will get a little less rent.
Okay.
And part of that's based on the price of the house, but...
But not totally, I guess.
Yeah, but not totally.
Yeah. And I would imagine if you've got a house that is a real high-value house, let's say, you might not get rent that would be... the rent, I assume, is going to be for, let's say it's a three-bedroom, two-bath house, and maybe someone paid $500,000 for that house, and down the street is one someone paid $300,000 for. They might rent for almost the same amount.
They can. Yeah,
in some cases, and so the person who paid the $500 is maybe not getting the return that they thought they might have gotten.
And that $500,000 house might have a wonderful view,
right?
And when you're selling a house, that makes a big difference price wise, but it doesn't make that big a difference when it comes to rent.
People might make it easier
more utilitarian. They're thinking three bedroom, two bath, double car garage.
And maybe it rents a little faster because it does have a view, and you might as well have a view than not have a view.
Correct,
but. Does it really translate to that much more rent? And that's interesting.
Yeah, the three areas that comes into play typically are view houses, houses that have acreage, and houses that have waterfront. Because the buyers are paying a premium that doesn't necessarily translate out to increased rents. They will get higher rents, but not dollar for dollar.
Now, by contrast, if you're the tenant and looking, you may be able to get a
wonderful deal.
Pretty nice house. And that's where you might want to lock into a 1-3 year lease or something so that you've got this waterfront property, this view property, and save the change, I guess, huh?
That's right. Something that might actually be out of reach to purchase, is affordable when it comes to paying rent.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Now, I imagine going into a house like that, you probably have to be really particular, I suppose, about credit checks. And well, probably the same kind of credit check, I guess, that you're doing with a
Everything's still the same, but typically the type of people that are going to apply for those houses don't have the other issues that, you know, sometimes
they're
we
not
have
just
to work
out of,
with.
They're not just out of prison the day before.
No, and they usually got a job, and, references and those
kinds
of
things.
Those
darn jobs.
Yeah.
You got to have a job, and you got to, you know, this is, you're being so unreasonable. Yeah. I don't understand it. Yeah.
Well, we understand the economy, though. I want to be clear that we do understand that it is difficult times out there. And if people come to us and they've had maybe issues with losing a house to foreclosure, and they can show us maybe that that was their only issue, that's not going to stop them from renting. If people have credit issues and it's from maybe a certain period of time where there was either a divorce or maybe medical issues. We see a lot of medical collections. We'll factor that in.
Okay.
If somebody's maybe between jobs or separating from the military, but they can say, you know, we've got savings, we put money away in the bank to cover us, we'll look at that. So we are real people out
there
at Park 52, but
But I like that, though. I mean, that to me is also an endorsement of using a good property management firm. Is you're thinking about that, and even goes back to the Common Sense and Justice Network fits really well, quite frankly, and that's why we picked that name is because it really does. I mean, the common sense tells you that that makes sense, and it's just. I think it fits into the network we've got going.
And the whole goal is to find a good person to live in the owner's house and pay the rent on time and take care of it. And so that's really what we're driving for.
Boy. So it's a tough one, though. I mean, everybody's different, and we can't sit here and say everybody should rent, everybody should buy. It really is, like everything in life, I guess. There's no set answer that makes perfect sense. Boy, unless you're going to move to Las Vegas maybe and buy the $75,000 condo.
Then there might be an advantage to being a buyer.
But then you won't have a job, unless your job is at the casinos, I guess. And I don't know if you're just over there playing roulette or something. I might worry about that. So what's one of the most gratifying things that's happened to you as a property manager?
You know, it probably happened just the other day. I got a call from one of the owners that we've been managing for like 25 years.
Yep.
And he was a young investor, and I actually worked with him and learned a few things from him and handled the sale of some of his multi-units. And now he's in a retirement home over in Gig Harbor.
Oh, boy.
And I don't know if Chili's on the internet, so I don't know if he's going to hear our broadcast.
Yeah.
But it was nice to hear from him and just call up and just kind of pass the time. And that's the one thing I enjoyed more about property management than I did on sales. It seemed like when I was selling real estate, I had a real good relationship with the people. It was real intense for a short period of time. But then they'd buy a house, and you know, you'd kind of lose touch with them. Where in property management, we deal with the people. They've been our clients for a number of years. And each month, we're in touch with them one way or the other. And working with them on a long-term basis. So that's, for me, really gratifying. And then I've also got to say that we're able to continue our business. And now my daughter, Carrie, is actually the one that's sort of assuming the reins with the help of the staff to do more and more around the office. So it's great to see the young kids come up and do the work. So that's pretty gratifying.
So you're going to be goofing off just a little bit here and there?
I'm going to work on my golf game, Bob.
I got
some serious work I've got to do. But I enjoy working, but I also enjoy watching the kids come in and take over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we opened up in 1982, so we're coming up.
Okay, I was going to ask you.
It'll be our 30th anniversary here in
that's terrific.
Next year.
Yeah, well, that says a lot, too, to have been in business successfully for 30 years.
30 years.
It's hard to find businesses that have been hanging out the shingle for that long, and the ones that are out there are the stable groups that provide good service.
One location, and we've been there for
so
a
now
time.
If someone wants to call in, they should ask for Carrie then?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, actually, the way our office is structured is we have six different property managers, and so they work on different types of properties.
Okay.
One property manager, she works on apartment buildings, but the other property managers, they work in geographical areas so that they have like a group of properties they can keep an eye on.
Oh, great.
So if somebody has an interest in rent, having us manage a property, they can call into the office or stop by. I think that's really great. I think everybody should maybe have a feel for what kind of company they're dealing with.
Oh, I think so, too.
Instead of on the phone or over the Internet, we're happy to have people come in.
Oh, and you've got a nice office. What's the address?
We're off South Tacoma Way, so people will find us in South Tacoma. We're 5210 Puget Sound.
Okay.
South Puget Sound, right.
That's
down
just
from
one
South
block
Park.
Off of parallel South Tacoma Way.
Parallel South Tacoma Way, yeah. Yep. So we're on a side street, but still a commercial busy area.
And what's the number if someone wants to call Carrie?
If they want to reach my
or Paul.
Should I give her cell phone out? Or no,
no, you better not do that. I don't know. We might be. Yeah, well, we could
Tacoma,
be in trouble.
253, and then it'd be 473-5200.
So 253-473-5200 for Park 52.
Correct. Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Yep. We've been talking to Paul Jakeman. And next week, by the way, speaking of all the credit issues with other folks, we are going to do a segment, bankruptcy and credit problems segment next week on Legal Line. We'll have attorney Jim Dart joining us, who's a real bankruptcy guru.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I always look for gurus. You know, you're the property management and sale guru. You know, you get guru status when you come on Legal Line, I think. And so I'm happy to bestow that.
Well, I'm happy to accept it, Bob.
We need a little hat or something. You know, I found one, but Diane said, no, that just looks too much like a dunce cap, and that wouldn't apply to anybody who's a guru. So knock it off, Bob. No, but we really appreciate your taking time to be with us, and people will be listening, and I know you're hitting 30 years, and so even though they're listening to this Bobcast in 2015, they can still call Park 52, especially with your continuity planning with Carrie and the other folks coming in to
Our doors will be open and our phone will be connected.
I like it.
That's our goal.
I like it. Real quick before you go, if someone had an emergency, I mean, so let's say that a tenant has an emergency, there's actually, we don't need to give it out, but there's a number they can call, I assume, middle a night call,
yes,
and they actually get a person,
yes,
which is really great.
Yeah,
like that.
That's on our website, and it's also on our lease agreement for
people.
Okay,
so it's not like a big secret.
No, it's not.
The secrets is a very the current word is transparent, right? So this everything's very transparent. Invite everybody to go to the website park52.com. Great website, lots of good information. Boy, get a copy of the tenant handbook. I all the times I've been to your website, I have not noticed the tenant handbook before.
Michael, way to go, Michael.
I like that. But it's such it's neat. All right. So thanks very much to Paul Jakeman.
Well, thanks, Bob.
We appreciate your taking time to join us on Legal Line right here on the Common Sense and Justice Network. This is Bob Pittman, and we'll be back with you next week. So stay in control of your legal affairs, at least until next week when we talk about bankruptcy with Jim Dart.